KPBS On Demand is supported by the City of Chula Vista and the Port of San Diego hosting South Bay Earth Day at Bayfront Park on Saturday, April 18th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. with tips on how to reduce your impact on the environment and hands-on green activities, food, and music. Additional information at southbayearthday.com.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Tuesday, March 10th. We hear from an international law professor about the war in Iran. More on that next, but first, the headlines. Gas prices have been steadily rising across the nation and here in San Diego County ever since the start of U.S.-Israeli strikes on Iran. According to AAA and Oil Price Information Service, prices for gas are now the highest they've been since May 2024. The average price of a gallon of self-serve regular gasoline has steadily increased for over 2 weeks. A couple days ago, it shot up nearly 15 cents, making it the largest one-day increase since 2022. The average price per gallon in our county was $5.21 as of yesterday. Longtime Republican Representative Daryl Issa has opted to retire rather than to run for re-election in the newly drawn 48th district. Issa made the announcement on Friday after missing the deadline to enter the race. Issa only a few months ago said he'd fight for the seat after the passage of Proposition 50. The statewide measure redrew congressional district boundaries to be more favorable toward Democratic candidates. The new 48th district covers parts of San Diego and Riverside counties, including Ramona, Escondido, Santee, Poway, Temecula, and Murrieta. Issa is now endorsing County Supervisor Jim Desmond for his seat and says he plans to finish out his term. The 2026 World Baseball Classic is officially underway. It runs through March 17th and features a collection of the best baseball players from all over the world, with several of your San Diego Padres participating. Padres stars Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr. are playing for a loaded Team Dominican Republic, as well as lefty pitcher Wandy Peralta. Yesterday, the MLB says Tatis hit the first ever Grand Slam by a Dominican Republic player in the Classic's history. The Padres also have players representing Mexico, the Netherlands, Panama, Canada, Israel, Japan, Italy, and the United States. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the Museum of Contemporary Art San Diego, now showing Giants, art from the Dean Collection, featuring more than 130 works of art from the personal collection of musical and cultural icons Swiss Beats and Alicia Keys. More at mcasd.org.
We're in the second week of the war in Iran, and the Trump administration remains vague on what the end of conflict will look like. Military reporter Andrew Dyer speaks to one expert who says the way the administration describes early operations as successful doesn't mean there's a coherent strategy.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth touted the U.S. military advantage on CBS's 60 Minutes Sunday.
Our capabilities are overwhelming compared to what Iran's are.
The Pentagon says it struck more than 3,000 targets in the first week of operations in Iran. But overwhelming force doesn't always spell strategic success, says Jonathan Grobart. He's a professor at San Diego State University who specializes in international law.
Iran's goal is really just to survive.
He says it's not clear what the military's objectives are, let alone if they can be achieved by force.
So to actually create a stable regime, it couldn't really do this in Iraq, right, with a massive ground invasion. Saddam Hussein and his regime was much weaker than the current regime in Iran.
On Monday, President Donald Trump said the U.S. has won the war in, quote, many ways, but not enough. Andrew Dyer, KPBS News.
The Lemon Grove City Council is one step closer to voting on a permanent ordinance that could expand renters' protections. But East County reporter Elena Faro says council members remain divided on the issue.
It's safe to say that Lemon Grove council members have strong feelings about whether the city should strengthen protections for its residents who rent.
If it was up to me, I would reverse the entire thing tonight. I don't believe it's necessary. Our job is to protect the city, and I have strong concerns that there may be liability.
That's Councilmember Yadira Altamirano at last week's city council meeting. She and Councilmember Seth Smith shared concerns about how the council approved a temporary ordinance last month. Under the temporary ordinance, landlords face new requirements with so-called no-fault evictions. When tenants are evicted, even though they've paid their rent and not violated terms of the lease. At a previous meeting, Mayor Allison Snow said a permanent ordinance is needed to confront the housing crisis.
Every day we sit on our hands and pretend like there's nothing that we can do is one day that one more person joins our homeless population.
The city will host two public workshops about the ordinance scheduled for later this month and April. Elaine Alfaro, KPBS News.
The San Diego Zoo yesterday won an extension of its lease in Balboa Park. Metro reporter Andrew Bowen says the city council approved the deal unanimously.
The city began talks with the zoo 8 months ago in an effort to find new revenue sources to help balance its budget. The proposal gives the zoo another 44 years on its lease in exchange for a new minimum payment of $3 million to the city each year. That money would disappear if the city eliminates parking fees in Balboa Park. Councilmember Jen Campbell said the zoo has a big impact on the local economy.
This amendment strengthens the city's long-standing partnership with the zoo, providing stability for continued investment in the property, and creates meaningful revenue for the city.
The zoo also committed to offering $250,000 worth of free admissions each year to nonprofits, schools, and children. Andrew Bowen, KPBS News.
Between Santa Isabel and Julian, artist James Hubble built a place that's hard to describe. Reporter John Carroll gives it his best shot in March's Museum of the Month.
Getting to the Alain Layel Foundation is not easy. Once you leave Highway 78, you're on a dirt road for a bit before you arrive here. Even if you have an inkling of what to expect, being here at first leads to questions both simple, what is this place? And profound, why is this place? Ask AI and you get an answer that's rather unsatisfying. 10 acres of integrated natural landscape and art structures. It is 10 acres, and the 14 structures on this land are certainly designed and made with art in mind. But why? Alain Layel Foundation Executive Director Marianne Gurdes has the best answers you're likely to find, and they all relate to its creator, Jim Hubble.
When Jim was really a child, he decided to seek beauty but never try to define it. Those are his words, not mine. What that means is he was going to use his ability to make art as a balance to some of the negativity that existed in the world.
Here, you can say you came to see the art and the buildings and mean exactly the same thing. So, describing the buildings is a challenge. Hubble loved to play with shapes, colors, and different materials used in unusual ways, from elaborate metalworking to stained glass to the smallest colored tiles. You find all of that and more here. The buildings on the property are separated into two sections, and that's because of 2003's disastrous Cedar Fire. There are the newer structures.
And that includes the buildings that you see behind me, the foundation where we have an office and we have meeting space. We keep an art archive of Jim's work.
And the ones that largely survived the fire intact.
Which represent Jim and Ann's original home, and that's the historically designated part of the property. That is comprises their residences where they lived, the studios where Jim made his art, and two galleries where he displays a lot of his art and used as a place to store artistic creations.
Jim and Ann's home is off limits to visitors, but fortunately all the other buildings are open, including the boys' house. The four Hubble sons grew up here. Gurdes says it's a favorite, and you can see why, especially when you step inside.
marvelous example of the inclusive nature of the way Jim designs architecture. So everything from the dome shape exterior to the elaborate interior with handmade tiles on the floor and mosaics of birds and other creatures and abalone shells in the bathroom, stained glass throwing light all over the rooms at different places at different times of the year.
One building that was lost and rebuilt after the fire is the Big Studio. Jim Hubble created not only the building itself, but a lot of art here. Those sounds are from an artist creating metal sculpture in the Big Studio. Gerda says keeping this place alive with newly created art was important to Jim Hubble.
We have artists in our employ. And everybody here practices some sort of art. It's just in the nature of wanting to be here. Creative people are drawn here.
To this day, all four Hubble sons are still involved with the foundation. Three of them sit on the board. The youngest, Brennan, was on site the day we were here. We talked to him about what it was like growing up in this place.
It was fun to have the mountains to walk around and explore with, to have nature so much a part of our lives. If you might notice, the buildings are really kind of small, so you kind of have to walk outside in order to go to the dining room or your bedroom.
Jim Hubble died in 2024. Ann Hubble is still alive, but no longer lives at Ilan Lael, the place she and her husband created. Ilan Lael can be translated from Hebrew in a couple of ways: a tree that belongs to God, or a tree that unites the physical and the spiritual. That may come about as close as you can to describing this place. John Carroll, KPBS News.
The Old Globe commissioned Fiasco Theater to create a new play based on Herman Melville's 1853 short story, Bartleby the Scrivener. The result is a workplace comedy that proves some things never change. Arts reporter Beth Accomando says the play's run has been extended through March 22nd.
Herman Melville's story of Bartleby the Scrivener begins with a simple act of passive resistance.
All I need you to do is to proof this paper with me. It's a page long. It'll take all of 5 minutes.
I would prefer not to.
That form of passive resistance turns out to be incredibly inflammatory to everyone around him.
Fiasco Theater's Noah Brody co-wrote the adaptation of Bartleby with Paul L. Coffey.
Part of the appeal of the short story is that it is a mystery and we don't really know exactly what is going on with Bartleby.
The playwrights were interested in a 19th century character who would be right at home in the movie Office Space, and how Melville's themes about humanity required no updating.
I also think that one of the miracles that Melville pulls off in this story is that there's no one who's clearly right or clearly wrong.
You can side with Bartleby or his employer. It's like a Rorschach test that reveals more about the viewer than the story, because Bartleby doesn't give you any information. He's an enigma, a blank canvas that you can project whatever you want onto. The cleverness of Melville's story and Fiasco Theater's play is that a passive character who simply prefers not to can stir so much vigorous debate and turmoil. Beth Accomando, KPBS News.
That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. Thanks for listening and subscribing. Have a great day.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers, offering a new 2025 lineup of vehicles at your local Toyota dealer, including a new Tacoma with turbocharged four-cylinder engines and a hybrid powertrain option. The San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.